but definitely you were as the highest authority for him, and he respects you very much. By that, he wasn't really fighting for his position. He was rather trying to say practical experiment proved that it works. But as far as losses, Dick is definitely saying the right thing. And from practical standpoint, he's 100% right.
Wes, from your recollection, was John tempted to build that experiment and to experiment with it in Staten Island? The way he was talking about it, I think he was considering it, and I think I was trying to tell him that it's a little bit of a dark horse. It might be an awful lot of effort that didn't pay out. So I'm not sure, but I think John was considering building one at one time. Over US, K2LIW.
Yeah, this is an interesting point. I remember there was a year, 2010, March, not in March, January. I was looking for some material for the TechNet at that time. And that's how I got attached permanently to TechNet. And you were, for me, also the highest authority I could find around. When I spoke to John about that, he was considering to doing it, but because you remain the highest authority in this area, he was like, could you just listen with what Dick is saying? And that's probably why he didn't go for it and to actually.
Okay, it's very nice to be called a high authority, but I make mistakes. I'm not right all the time. Nobody bats a thousand, as you've often heard me say. You have to admit, occasionally you make mistakes. So I explained where my skepticism is coming from, and that at least...
12:04 a.m. 73, and good night. From the W2L.
The repeater is off the air. This is N2A2H, Andy, Richmond Hill, Queens. I believe the repeater is off the air.
Eric, I thought you were going to fix this.
You can explain it that way if you want to, Wes.
It is easy to explain. You were talking about oscilloscope. And I said to myself, I never had oscilloscope. And then you were talking about vector network analyzer. I said to myself, I never had vector network analyzer. And then you were talking about spectrum analyzer. And I said to myself, I never had in my life spectrum analyzer. And then I went over and over and over till I simply went too far away. So instead of being interesting on the technet, I became boring. But Dick, some marvelous person, and to Adrian.
Yeah, I think we will pick up Mr. GXM. Andy, take over. Yeah, Roy.
Yes, thank you. GXM, you want to say something? Thank you. This is Rich, WB2 Golf X-Ray Mike. I'm joining the festivities tonight. Just got home from work and hoping not too late to give my fondest wishes to the memory of John. Over. Mike, go ahead. He was just so very helpful on the TechNet. I've been listening to the TechNet, and I've been listening to Dick and John and for a few years now, religiously, every Sunday night. I beat a path home from wherever I am to be here at 8 o'clock to listen to you guys talk, and feeling pretty good about that. And especially after my father left in December, you guys kept me company every Sunday night, and I really appreciate that. John was a big part of that, answering all sorts of questions. WB2GXM.
Thank you very much for that.
And me too. Thank you very much for that.
Well, the TechNet is very popular, as it should be, award-winning, ARRL, and it's the high point of my week.
Roy, give us a few words,
quite a few topics in helping me out. Specifically, Wes, we were talking about oscilloscopes. He helped me with an oscilloscope question in a big way a few weeks, months ago. Time flies. So he was quite knowledgeable person and wonderful to talk to. Gold coming from him every single minute. WB2 Jackson.
I agree, but Dick wanted to say something.
All of a sudden, I forgot what it was. I'll give it back to you, Roy. I hope it comes back into my mind.
Okay, very good. And just for the sake of inflating Dick's head a little bit more, I have a book from England that's a book all about a long line of linear amplifiers. They're all tube-based. None of them are solid-state. And one of the entries is on a linear amplifier that seems to be called a K2 RIW amplifier. So Dick is the famous guy.
I have a question to Dick. What triggered 30-something years of his activity for the benefit of unknown guys all around? What makes you Dick doing that? And to Adrian.
I can't take complete credit for all of the articles I've written. I was very lucky to be exposed to some very smart people at a company called Airborne Instruments Laboratory, where I worked there for 35 years. And some of the ham radio operators there that were doing state-of-the-art research, it was a guy named Hank Keane, W2CTK, who did the early development work on strip line circuits, strip line printed circuit circuits. And Hank Keane taught me how strip line worked, and I went and extended it beyond printed circuit materials and made an air-spaced strip line, and that became the so-called RIW parallel kilowatt amplifier. It really was a copy of the fact that the overlay transistors of those days, you put a bunch of transistors in parallel, and they work like a charm inside the package. And so I decided to put these two tubes in parallel with a piece of strip line. And so I was very lucky to be working at a company that was doing the kind of work that was so exciting, and that gave me the enthusiasm for an awful lot of those articles. So that's where some of it came from, Wes. OUS, K2LAW.
I'm 61 and a half years old, and I've been pretty active on ham radio in Europe. I was active in the 90s as well. I've never met a gentleman who voluntarily, with no charge, gave education to others to the same extent. It's just like a drug. You listen to the technet and you cannot stop. And I remember the early years when you were kind enough to stay with us till 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning. It was like, wow. And nobody pays you for it. I'm not really trying to compliment you, but I don't even have a word. Maybe Dr. Roy would translate me properly. Dr. Roy.
Dick, you mean you haven't been getting the checks in the mail?
Unfortunately, some of them bounce when I cash them. That's a joke. Quite a few people, when they have a piece of valuable information, hold it close to their chest for fear that they won't have control of it, for fear that if they give it away, they're going to lose a fortune, and they think there's very little of it. Because of my exposure at that company, Airborne Instruments Laboratory, I got exposed to so darn many ideas from so darn many smart people. They had 1,050 degreed engineers in that company. Very high ratio of engineers to employees. Did a lot of pure research. So my attitude was, I don't have to worry about holding on to that idea. There's a lot more where that came from, because I was being exposed to a lot of people doing an awful lot of good work. I would take all of my lunch hours or my 15-minute coffee break times, walk around the building and talk to people. And lucky for me, they were willing to talk to me and tell me what they're doing and why they're doing it and why it was working so well or why it wasn't working so well. So I was very lucky to be in that particular location. Let me drop. I had a number of other job offers at other companies and occasionally at a higher salary, but I came to the conclusion I'd be giving up too much if I left, so I stayed there. And I made a couple of bad moves. I could have worked my way up to a high position within the company, but I wanted to keep touching hardware, and so I did. So my attitude is that there's more ideas where that came from. I don't have to worry about losing that particular one, so to speak. I may be wrong, but that was my philosophy throughout most of that period of time. Over to you, Roy, AC2GS, K2IW.
Again, it's the concept of generosity. You know, knowledge is, you know, especially in this computer era, And knowledge needs to be free is the general concept. And your first reflect is to share it. As with John, I hope, as with myself, I once came upon a ham that had the weirdest attitude that you had to prove your worthiness before he would waste his time telling you his pearls of wisdom. I tend to find that people like that, their pearls of wisdom are made out of plastic.
Yeah, along those lines, you've heard us say on the TechNet many times, there's no such thing as a dumb question. The so-called dumb question is being voiced by a person who doesn't have the right vocabulary yet. The so-called dumb question, if you think about it, is the one most deserving of an answer because there's the biggest gap between what he knows and what he wants to know. And he may be in the second, third, or fourth state of knowledge, if you know what that means. The first state of knowledge is where you don't know something. And step by step, you go through it. And the fifth state of knowledge is where you think you know it so well, you make the mistake of thinking everybody else knows it. Well, knowledge is something that should be shared. And then if you can create the right environment where people are tossing ideas back and forth, progress can be made. That French saying is very true. A person alone is in bad company. You got to be talking to other people. Ham radio operators are communicators. The main thing we do with the ham radio operator is to compare ideas, whether they come from a foreign country or whatever. In the process, prejudices get removed, knowledge gets transferred, people form friendships, good things happen. AC2GS, K2RIW.
The only dumb question is the one that's not asked, KD2CBB.
I agree 101%. Knowledge is not a zero-sum game, as they taught me in game theory. And I think that Todd really would like to say something, so maybe we'll hand it over the mic to Todd, and he can say what he wants to say.
Okay, thanks. KD2CBB. One of the things that was barely even just, I think, hinted at about John was his entirely wicked sense of humor. He absolutely had a sense of humor beyond belief. I have a couple of stories, one which would require a setup, the other one which doesn't. It may clear up some little bit of misconception for you guys. You probably heard the Turbo comment, Turbolization. And some of you might be wondering, and that actually came from John. John actually liked talking to Susie, and he made it a point whenever she's around, you know, make sure that, you know, you give me a shout. So she gets a chance to talk to her. And we were talking about some tactical stuff the last time that Susie heard him drop. So Susie came in, and I said, well, you know, you got to talk to John. She's like, oh, no. I don't know as much as Dick or as John. I'm dumb. They don't want to talk to me, and blah, 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 you know, went on like that. So I said, that's not true. They like talking. Oh, come on. All right, look, you want proof? I keyed up. KC2, WGB. Good evening, Todd. How are you? And I said, John, I got to ask you a question point blank. What do you think of Susie and is she intelligent? Something along those lines. John came right back and he runs down a whole list. Well, if she's intelligent, she can carry on her end of the conversation. Drop. You know, she has a different perspective, having grown up in Europe, and he's running down this whole list. Then John gets to the end and he says, why do you ask? And I said, well, because somebody said to me that you don't like talking to Susie. And he was like, why? Who would say that? I said, I'm not going to put words in the horse's mouth. handed the mic to Susie, and, you know, and they started the talk. Oh, thank you for saying all that. It's not true. No, it is true. Da, da, da. Unlike Todd, who sounds like a gerbil. And that was the start of the whole thing. And, you know, I wouldn't take something like that from anyone else, but my gosh, you know, that sense of humor and the joke between him and myself, I mean, it just went on for years. And so, you know, his sense of humor, I don't know, I really didn't hear much about it tonight, but I think it should be brought up. KD2, CBB.
Todd, he bantered with you.
I'm sorry, I sneezed. What was that?
I said John bantered with you. You were the bantering partner.
Oh, yeah, from time to time, yes. I mean, as I said before, there was another side that you guys didn't see. I mean, I was amazed, you know, I called up the house, and I was amazed that, like, a couple different people would answer the phone on occasion. I was amazed that they even knew who I was. But, no, like I said, you know, we supported each other in certain things. In some cases, we might get into something technical, in some other cases, not. But, you know, even so, his sense of humor, I mean, I would hear it when he was talking on the air to other people, it would just go right over some people's heads, too. So, you know, it really was a very subtle but very sharp sense of humor he had.
Sounds to me like Todd volunteered to be the straight man, and John caught on to that real fast.
John had a very dry sense of humor.
Well, if it was dry, I used WD-40. That was another running gag we had about the WD-40 and improper use and what it would do. And the graphite. That was the whole thing about the squeaky wheel. You know, the gerbil, the squeaky wheel, and so on. But that's one you guys know about. And, you know, so I just don't understand. I mean, you guys also were witness to some of his humor as well. And I think that was also an important part of John.
Roy, I think one of the things we should consider when it comes to investigating how John did so much, I wonder if Donna knows whether or not John's IQ was ever measured. I suspect that if it had been measured correctly, it might have been a pretty high number. Maybe it would be kind of fun to investigate that as to whether or not anybody knows. AC2GS, K2IW.
I was actually going to ask the same question about an hour ago, but I didn't have the nerve to ask.
You can pass the question over to Wes to ask Donna. IQs really, unfortunately, don't correlate 100%. I mean, there are people with incredibly high IQs who just fill out crossword puzzles for a living at this point. So, you know, it went out of fashion to have them scored, but it would be interesting to find out.
Another quick comment on that would, I think Stephen Hawking may not have the highest IQ, but he seems to be recognized as the world's smartest man.
It's very difficult to measure things like this because, you know, inventiveness, cognitive skills, memory, it's a very complicated thing, and sometimes you sort of have to be in the right place at the right time with the right circumstances to kind of have your gee whiz moment.
Well, when I used to play chess in the city, the men's group did me, and they said I was above average in intelligence and below average in social intelligence. So I guess they know what they're talking about. And that's one thing I never got to do. I never got to play a game of chess with John, which I regret. He was talking about drinking wine and smoking cigars, or it sounded good to me. But anyway, I think maybe Donna can answer the question for us, if we can let her get a word in edgewise.
Donna wasn't around. She when just I, came back was, for so she went for a few minutes for the dog.
Could you repeat the question? Internship at Good Morning America, and the interviewer, you know, was talking to me. I remember she said something like, you must be a very intelligent person. And I said, what kind of intelligence are you talking about? Go ahead.
Okay, so artificial intelligence.
Okay, David, you were doubling with Wesley. Wesley wanted the question again. The question is, does Donna know what John's IQ was recorded to be?
I'm sorry, no, I do not.
Yeah, but talking about that, emotional intelligence or emotional quotient, which would be EQ, right? We could define it as individual ability to identify, evaluate, and control, express emotions. And for Dr. Roy, first I'm going to give you a little bit of introduction so you could explain me better. Let me jump. People with high IQ usually make great leaders or team of players because of their ability to understand, so emphasize, or connect with the people around them. So IQ, or say the intelligent quotient, is a score that is derived from one of the several standards or say tests. Question: are we really making something that is a sort of the way to assign people to the group, but really has nothing to do with ability to succeed? And that's about IQ. Dr. Roy.
AC2G, as far as I'm aware, in schools, they don't even do IQ testing anymore.
My
most organizations don't do IQ testing.
I mean,
the major organization that still does IQ testing is NASA, so that you can join their weird little club. It doesn't correlate with a whole bunch of other things. I tend to disagree that people with high IQs are good leaders. You need social skills to be a good leader. And intellectual quotient doesn't really measure your social skills. So, you know, there are guys out there who are very, very bright, and I grew up with them. But they have social problems, and so they're the last guy I'm going to put in charge of anyone because no one would listen to them.
Roy, we should pick up the person who is coming through on either Echo Link or IRLT. We've doubled with him a couple of times. There is a person trying to make a comment. Roy, go ahead.
Okay, that's David. David, KG2RY, please say your comment. You were telling something about being told that you were intelligent. You were an intern at a television show.
QSL, thank you, Roy. I enrolled in art school at NYU Tisch School of the Arts. I was a film and TV major for my undergraduate studies. And I went to Good Morning America for, you know, to get an interview for an internship. And she talked to me for a while, and she concluded, "You're a very intelligent person." And I asked her, "What kind of intelligence are you talking about?" You know, there's all kinds of intelligence. You could be really smart. You know, you could be very aware. You could be spiritually aware. You can know about things that are unknown to most people. You can work for certain groups or agencies and have that ability. Back to you, sir.
that's true, but usually in American culture in the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s, it just means that you can speak well and can probably cite some facts and draw some conclusion.
Yeah, so I think that's what she meant, but, you know, her questions were, you know, very deeply rooted in kind of like political news and, let's just say, workings of, how a country works. Go ahead.
Well, that makes a great deal of sense, because it was a television show that had to do about morning news that very often was based in politics. So, you know, they really probably wouldn't need to know if you knew about modern art or how to flambé something. It's probably that the day-to-day routine is more based on current events, and they wanted to know if you had a vague idea of current events. Nowadays, unfortunately, there are some people you can talk to who don't have a clue about what's going on in the outside world. They're living in an interesting little self-covering bubble.
Question, KDTC Relief.
Thank goodness we've never elected a president like that.
Go ahead, Roy. Oh, I've learned never to discuss politics on this repeater. Yes, Todd, what would you like to say?
Well, the question of, shall we say, various kinds of intelligence. Is somebody who can think outside the box, is that one marker of one kind of intelligence? Or, you know, I mean, obviously you can be intelligent and do everything the way it's always been done, because that's the way it's always been done, but is the ability to think outside the box any indicator, or would intelligent people try to think outside the box, or you know, I mean, it's just a curiosity, because as I go through life, as you guys know, everything is malleable for me. Everything keeps changing on me. That's the sight and hearing. I have to keep adapting. So I have to keep thinking outside the box just in order to function at the same level. You know, I'm forced into that. But my question is, if you're not forced into it, what does that indicate?
As much as I hate that bumper sticker phrase, it indicates a lack of rigidity, which is one of many various forms of intelligence in human beings.
But if you don't like the bumper sticker of outside the box, it just means to be flexible enough, as you stated, but to actively seek a better or different way to accomplish the same thing. In other words, if you do something that always takes 6 steps, and you actively go out and search for a way to do it in 4 steps, you know, different things like that, when you're not forced into it. Now, that's not, obviously, like you said, the rigidity and being flexible, I get that, but to actively seek it out, I'm just that. I guess that's more what I'm driving at.
You know, as this relates to John, I remember one time he was complaining that some person that he was that contracted him to do some kind of lecture job, some kind of job, and he was complaining that they didn't understand what he was doing, or the value of what he was doing. And I remember the first thing that came to my mind is maybe they're not paying him enough. Go ahead.
I don't quite know how you can be passively flexible, so I'm not quite sure of the difference. I know what inside the box or outside the box or the box in general is about. I just find it a tedious cliche that's overused, abused, and, you know, like there's no I in teamwork stuff. I get a rash in the presence of of bumper stickers.
QSL. But, you know, when I told him that maybe he isn't getting paid enough, he said, I already get paid an obscene amount of money for my work. So at least I know I can appreciate, you know, his humor.
I have heard him say things like that, too.
Okay, I agree.
God.
I wanted him not double, and I wanted to let the repeater chime up. When Dick talks about doing an experiment, how many times you fail, you have to, you know, keep looking for different. And when someone finally breaks through with one of their experiments that produces results, everybody says, oh, they're intelligent. So maybe that's the area. Or if an artist creates a piece of work that's never been done before, whether it be with paint and doing it in a way that's never been done, sculpture or whatever the case might be, poetry or whatever, you know, it doesn't matter. Whether it be in hard science or what, that creativity, the drive to be flexible enough to constantly go after it, I mean, and come up with innovation, to come up with new ideas. I mean, that's really what the bumper sticker, at least how I'm using it, means. So, you know, is there an area that's like just one segment, or is it a hallmark of somebody who's considered intelligent? I mean, this is, you know, the question is not being answered here.
Well, it's really
creativity is the only indicator of intelligence. You can be quite intelligent and not originate anything. You know, there are people who just know how things work because they were taught how things work and they never actually went to the trouble of extending that. And to a degree, many of those people, I think, are still very intelligent. Some of them have memorized stuff, but you can kind of tell the difference. I know guys who read a textbook and could recite the textbook. They couldn't process the information, and they couldn't parse it, but they could memorize it, and that's not quite the same.
Not quite. John and I got into a whole conversation about this, actually. I think about 4 years, I don't remember. But, yeah, no, we're not talking about memorizing and appearing. I'm talking about the ones who do. That's what I'm driving at. And I wonder. I just wonder.
I do, I'm KQRIW, I do consulting work for quite a few years. John also did consulting work. And one of the things John volunteered to me, I'm pretty sure he did it over the air, but maybe it was a private conversation, telephone conversation, is that his consulting rate was $250 per hour. The fact that he could request that kind of money and be paid it is a very strong indication that he had people who had a lot of faith in him and really believed in he could solve their problems. I've never charged anything like that. I didn't have the nerve to do it. I think John told me that was always his rate. That's a very strong indication of a person that's being very well respected. Over to you, Roy, K2RIW.
Like the old joke went, you know, why are divorces so expensive? Because they're worth it. So he was able to get that money because he was worth it. At the end of the day, the stuff that he did, and, you know, he would share every so often things that he was doing in his lab as piecemeal stuff. But they sounded semi, you know, amazing that, you know, he was rebuilding things there, you know, just as he was working slowly, progressively, basically rebuilding industrial equipment.
What I think you're saying is that the object in question was no longer being manufactured. So the only way to get the equipment back on the air, so to speak, would be to take it apart and repair it. And very little... So he was the person that could fix almost anything, is what I think you're saying, Roy. Go ahead.
Oftentimes the parts weren't available, or they were more difficult to get than gold and silver and such. Sometimes there's only one part. It's someplace in the Middle East, or it's someplace in China. He just kind of put it on the table and worked for about a week, and sounded amazing to me secondhand.
I wonder if we could check with Donna and find out that there was almost never a case in which John said, "I can't fix that." I bet he almost never said that. Is that true, Donna?
Richard, that is true. He has never, ever, ever said, "I can't fix that." It was always, "Let me take a look at it. I'll get back to you later."
And I can confirm that. He never said to me, "I cannot do it," no. With N2XGN.
I'll point out one thing. I've known a couple of people, my uncle and my father, for example. Something was manufactured, and eventually the thing would fail, and they would go ahead and remanufacture one or two or three little segments of whatever the component was, and that would solve the problem because it actually wasn't designed properly. And that's one thing about John. If it was designed properly, he loved it. If it wasn't, it was junk. KD2CBV.
In the course of discussion, I was trying to make a funny line. Let's say I have a creature in front of me, and the creature looks very much like Dr. Roy. And I'm trying to determine his academic abilities, or identify him more, or just think about his success in the workplace, or how good he would be as a team player or team leader. A question for Dr. Roy: if would you use IQ or EQ to determine more about this creature? And to Adrian.
AC2GS. I personally wouldn't rely on either indicator. They're not that accurate. They might give you a rough estimate, but ultimately, I think the best approach is to interact with the people and get a better sense of their abilities, rather than rely on some standardized test that was written up 70 years ago and was never really proven to be significant enough to continue to do the testing.
I was talking to my wife, a shrink, right? I was thinking, actually, that was when I got one of the emails of yours and the language. Oh, boy. I think Dick could say also a few words about that, the language that he uses in his emails. And I was thinking, for a guy like Dr. Roy, is it just needs to be born in an intellectual environment, learn some English as a child, maybe some other languages, a root of English, or maybe become a British citizen, although he doesn't have an accent, but he has all of the skill of that most richest language, unlimited in words, phrases, or expressional formats, and
how come the guy got the literature or interest in the literature? Maybe that happened when he was 16 years old. Maybe he write the novels. Maybe he just read the novels. And, you know, just trying to, you know, get something out of it. Dr. Roy.
You can take the boy out of Brooklyn, but you can't take the Brooklyn out of the boy, or in this case, the man.
That's quite true. Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I really don't want to focus on me because I'm not the point of this exercise tonight. I'm curious and I like to read. And so if you read a lot, you're exposed to a lot of different ways to express things. And I tend to rely on that too much. And sometimes people kind of ask me if I really enjoy a turn of phrase. And unfortunately, yeah, I do. So I tend to use them. But, you know, different strokes for different folks. Again, I just happen to like to read.
Nick.
Not easy to find out what causes a person with a high accomplishment capability. Is it, are they born with the right genetics? Are they brought up in the right family? Are they exposed to the right people, the right education, the right books? Take some kind of a combination. And as a parent, you'd like your child to have high capability, and you'd like to create the environment for that child that's going to make that happen. You've got to be careful as a parent. You can end up trying to live through your child and be, I guess they call it a helicopter parent, if you know what I mean. So what makes high accomplishment? What makes a really effective person? I don't think there's a simple answer to that. So John was one of those people. Did he have the right genetics? Born at the right time? Brought up in the right community? Is there something magic about that particular Todd's Hill area of Staten Island? There's no easy solution to that one, is my guess. Maybe Roy's got an opinion on this. AC2GS, K2IW.
CBV.
Some couple things that came up. Don't forget Ohio too. You also spent a lot of time in Ohio in his youth. One of the things that Roy mentioned, that John never lost his sense of curiosity, and I think most kids are incredibly curious. And what Dick just said regarding, you know, brought up in, okay, environment and on, community, et cetera. One of the things from my own experience is when my parents would tell me a story, I noticed that it changed. But when they read it from a book, it never changed. And so here I am at like whatever, age three, and I'm like, I want to be able to read because there's so much stuff in there, and I want to find out what it is. In that regard, you wind up going down the road of you want to read, and then you start devouring books. I, like Roy, loved to read. I say it in past tense. It hurt the heck out of me. I had to give away all my books in the last couple of years, and easily thousands and thousands and thousands of books. Anyway, the point is that curiosity. I mean, one of the things about ham radio, my father bought me a radio when I was 4 years old. It had an AM and shortwave. I actually still have it, and it still works. They used to engineer things better back then. So I think that right there, if you encourage it and feed it, is one of the bigger components.
Roy, at what age did you start reading?
You know, I wish I could tell you some kind of amazing story that I started to read when I was 6 months old or something, but and it's interesting. The first word apparently out of my mouth was N-O, so I guess I kind of set my cynicism and pessimism at an early age. But, you know, I learned in first grade and such. You know, that was before phonetics, and I just took to it. I mean, one of the greatest discoveries of my childhood was my local library, and I couldn't wait for the time that I could leave the top floor with the kiddie books and go down into the basement to read the reference stuff. I don't know why. We had three books in the house, again, because my parents didn't quite understand why you should buy any books if there were libraries in the world. But I just took to it, and I don't know. I think it's nurture and nature, unfortunately. It's a very complex, unpredictable thing. You know, if you look at families, there are smart people that give birth to stupid people that give birth to smart people. So there's nothing inherent that runs down the genetics.
I believe I agree with you. Let me wrap up.
Does Donna know when John first started reading?
No, it doesn't look like she... Do you know it too? No, she doesn't know.
I was given a radio with the short wave, as well as the books and the curiosity. If you feed that curiosity, whether it be books or radio or something, that's where I was heading as a major component.
Another person also?
Wanted to say something.
Yeah, I think it's Dave trying to say something.
I read this book called How to Read a Film.
Interesting is that Donna said that she was reading at three. Also, I was thinking what makes a person a characteristic, because everybody, every one of you guys is pretty much characteristic. I wonder if you agree with me, Dr. Roy. I believe a person needs to get the idioms, the subtle differences in connotation that casual speaker may miss and still get some messages across from other people. And then this is like a start-up. And we go along with time, there are other things that accumulate and simply pile up on the top of it, which would be education, and which would be the social experience, and that makes Eddie and John, Roy, Dick, when you hear the few words on the radio, you know exactly who it is, or who he is. Dr. Roy.
Once again, I don't think that correlates directly with intelligence. It's a social skill. There are people who can pick up on social cues. If they're smart, if they're generally intelligent, they could do more with it. But there are very intelligent people. You know, you have this entire group of people with Asperger's who can't pick up these social cues, and they're very socially awkward, but they're very intelligent.
But now you're diagnosing me on the air, KD2CBV.
A little doubling between Todd and Wesley.
That's a thought. Contradictory knowledge is active and dynamic.
But it doesn't have to be.
Well, contradictory knowledge could be conflicting, but I think it's rather interesting when you have two forces of difference, you know, come together and create this firework of some kind of bigger conversation. Go ahead.
It depends. I mean, sometimes it leaves you with something called cognitive dissonance, which makes people go a little wacky.
Well, you know, certain things we can control. Certain things are beyond our control. You know, you have some kind of communication, you know. You can't always be sure, you know, what the outcome would be. I know that John is in a good place. You know, I'm a very spiritual person, and I bless him. I send him all my best.
Interesting, because I was with John almost every night for the long period of time. We did have some conversation about cognitive dissonance, difference, or dissidence. But I was never able to ask anybody else about their opinion about it. So, Dr. Roy.
You sort of have to put a question in a question form. I mean, it's not like you really want me to do a dissertation on cognitive dissonance. It's when there's two principles that conflict with each other in life, and you have to somehow deal with them, and very often it breaks people's minds a little bit, and they go off into depressions and denials and all kinds of not very productive ways.
Katie, do you see me?
I got something I got to do in about 4 hours, guys. So I'll probably listen to you guys as I pass out, but I do want to say one thing. Dick and I were having a conversation about the radio wave. And, you know, the thing is, that radio wave, when it breaks free of the earth, will go on forever and ever. And I do take a little bit of comfort in that regarding John. That voice is out there somewhere. And so, with that, I'm going to have to not key up anymore.
Thank you for visiting
really
the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system. Code number 9126 on the New England Reflector.
Link
Thanks,
clear.
Guys, to all, have a great weekend and hope to hear everybody down the line. Katie 2, CBB.
And pleasant dreams, and thank you for coming and participating and expanding our appreciation for John tonight.
Thank you very much for being with us. Then I wanted to say three things about her father.
Before we lose everyone tonight, I would like you to know, my father told me when he was a child, he studied the dictionary. Not many people have done that. However, he really did. There was something, he was an excellent father to me. I loved him. He's God to me. He taught me everything in life. My father would work hard every day, but when he came home, his family was very important as well. He didn't stop working. As far as I'm concerned, he gave me so much attention. I never felt neglected in any way. And one of those things was, he would play a game. This was when I was about 8 years old, and it went on for years. My father would come home, and there was this dictionary that would sit prominently in the living room. It was about a foot thick dictionary. And he would come home and tell me a word. If I could look that word up in that dictionary within a certain amount of time, he'd pay me a dollar. you know, as it went on, word after word after word.